Hello, hello, and welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and you are listening to episode number 35. On today's show, it's tricks, treats, and travel photography. And we're going to be talking about better ways to take pictures while visiting family and friends this holiday season. Rather apropos, given that we just got back from Thanksgiving, and we're all getting the travel bug so we can go see family and friends and capturing pictures of kids as they're opening their treats and their presents. So we're going to be talking about that on today's show. Great ways that you can capture really cool photos when you're traveling, either in other towns or in your own town, because even around your own town, you can shoot for travel photography. That may sound kind of weird, but we're going to clear that up for you. We're going to be talking with Andy Smith, a Dallas-based photographer, on how she has found success in this area. Last up, we'll take a few listener questions and answers. All that's coming up on episode 35 of Learning Digital Photography. To Learning Digital Photography. First up on this week's show, as always, I'm going to cover a little bit of the news for you. And this is covering a little bit longer of a news time frame than previously because of the Thanksgiving holiday where a lot of us were out of town, myself included, went down to see some in-laws. So just catching up on a couple of news items of note that I'd heard from other bloggers and podcasters out there. And a big one that I missed, and probably because I'm more Canon-centric, but in the interest of full disclosure, there is a new video contest out from Nikon USA. They've launched this video contest with a grand prize of, it looks like $100,000. So it's a $100,000 grand prize. And the theme or the subject matter is any video capable camera, and well, actually, that's the requirement of any video capable camera. And the theme is a day through your lens. And all you have to do is submit your video captured before December 30th, I think. No, December 15th of this year, 140 seconds. So it's kind of in keeping with like that whole Twitter theme of 140 characters. So nothing too long. And it's just a really interesting thing because it's a question of whether or not pros will get involved because of the size of the prize, when they probably really want to be encouraging more of the up-and-comers, the newcomers, to be doing that. And it's open to anyone with any make a video camera. So if you have a camera, it doesn't matter whether you're a Nikon shooter, a Canon shooter, a point-and-shoot shooter, any kind of camera that shoots video, you are welcome to record. Just make sure it's 140 seconds or less, and you post it up to the Nikon website before December 15th. You could be in the running to win $100,000. So that's something worth considering. I'm going to throw a link to that over in the show notes. To the Nikon USA website, where they give you more of the information for that contest. And then the other thing of note that I didn't mention in last week's show was this announcement from Canon. And Canon made a pretty interesting announcement in this regard because the entire title sequence for Saturday Night Live from a week or two ago was shot with the Canon 5D Mark II. They used a 5D Mark II, actually, and also a 7D, and they used these to capture the entire intro scene. And the reason why this is newsworthy is because usually when you're doing video shoots, especially for TV shows, you've got a pretty good-sized production crew. So by using just the 5D Mark II and the 7D, where you can shoot in a lot lower light than what you could with production lenses, you're able to go more into natural environments and keep that natural look and feel. And it's also incorporates the 30 frames per second footage from the 5D Mark II, as well as the 60 frames per second footage used for slow motion segments with the 7D. So it's a pretty interesting thing that the Canon camera line is starting to be used in video segments for some serious big time productions. I mean, SNL is now a mom and pop shop, to be sure. We're talking about NBC here, and the fact that they're using it's not necessarily specific to Canon, but that they're using camera equipment for what traditionally was used when video was used is pretty significant news item of note. And I think that might be an indication of how things will be boding into the future. So that's something you may want to be looking at as well. I'll post a link to the news story in the photo feed as well, or on the blog feed as well. So those are two items of photographic note. Because we're kind of on a shortened time frame for the blog and podcast this week. I'm going to move right on into the main segment without a breakup here. And the main segment or the theme for this week's show is treats, travel, and tips and tricks. And the reason why I kind of went with this theme is because a lot of us are traveling this time of year, and we're going out, we're sitting down with family, sitting down with friends, and enjoying the holidays, and enjoying good cheer. And a lot of us, being photographers or enthusiasts or professionals, are being expected, on some level anyway, to take some pictures. So for those of you that have the photo bug, if you feel a sense of obligation to take some pictures, we've got some great ways that you can capture really nice images with the quality of your own work. And the first way is to shoot wide open. And actually, that's probably the best way to capture candid photography, if you will, during family events, and especially in low-light photography, because if you shoot wide open, not only is that going to let the most amount of light in, so you're going to be able to get the shutter speeds fast enough for decent exposures, but you're also going to get a really shallow depth of field. So that means if you've got a kid that's opening a present, say in front of a Christmas tree, or you're at the Thanksgiving table, or you're at whatever venture at, if you have your subject in focus, everything else will get nicely blurred out behind you if you have that really shallow depth of field when you're shooting wide open. And that's just a great way to capture portrait work in general, especially if you're going with a wide angle lens or say a nifty 50 or something like that. That is probably one of the best tips that I can think of for shooting travel photography, for shooting family photos and portrait photos and things like that in low light, is to shoot wide open. It'll really give you a good narrow depth of field and some nice bokeh as well. Different lenses will have different types of bokeh to them. And when I refer to bokeh, I'm referring to the blurred out spots that are created when you shoot with a narrow depth of field. So you might want to play around with your gear, and that's the second tip, is to play around with your gear, see the different kinds of bokeh that can come out from different lenses, because higher quality lenses will usually have smoother gradations between different colors and different lighting in the background. And if that's the effect you're going for, you're going to probably want to shoot with the higher quality glass versus the lower quality, where you can get the actual hexagonal shapes. And it really depends on what you're going for. So if you like the hexagonal shapes, then definitely you could shoot with a nifty 50, the 2.0 or the 1.8 or something like that, where you can get those nice hexes in your bokeh, in your background there. So those are the two big tips I can think of. The first one, again, is to shoot wide open. You get that nice narrow depth of field. And second is to make sure you're shooting with the right lens, because different lenses can have different types of bokeh or out-of-focus backgrounds there. So those are two tips to consider when going to take travel photos. Coming up after the break, though, we're going to have a conversation with Andy Smith, a travel photographer based out of the Dallas area, and we're going to get her take and her feedback and get some tips from her on how to capture good travel photos when you're traveling around this holiday season. All that's coming up in just a minute, so don't go away. I'll be back right after this. Okay, anyway, welcome back to Learning Digital Photography. With us on the show today is Andy Smith, who's making faces at me because we're recording this on video, but you're only getting the audio. So right back at you. Bye. Welcome to the show, Andy. Well, good to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, hi. There you are. We have way too much fun when we're doing this. This is like four conversations for one show. So what does that tell you? Well, the reason why we're having Andy on the show today, because as you know, our theme is treats, travel, and tricks. And Andy does a lot of travel photography for the Dallas area. And I figured she would be a good person to bring on. And we could pick her brain, see what she knows about travel photography. I know that pick really hurts, doesn't it? Well, anyway, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Good to have you on the show. And just to let you know, what we were talking about previously was how to take better pictures when you are visiting family over the holidays, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever. And there's a lot of ways where you can decrease your depth of field to get a really shallow depth of field where it's nice and soft behind the subject, so you can really capture a person's attention with your main subject. And you do that a lot with your photographs, don't you? I've seen a lot of that kind of shallow depth of field. Is that your kind of thing? Is that your niche thing when it comes to travel photography?
It's my thing across the board. I shoot as wide open as I can on any type of subject I'm shooting.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty much is that, and that's for the sports photography as well, correct?
Yes, and airplanes.
And Errol, that's right. I completely forgot to mention. Annie is multi-talented. Not only does she do travel photography, but she does a lot of sports photography and airplane photography. You can see all her work over on her website at andysmithphotography.net. Is it .net or
It's
.com?
dot net.
.net. Okay. So you can see all her photography over there. And like we were just saying, she's really big on that that low depth of field. So that means you shoot wide open. What's your widest lens that you have?
The 50mm 1.4.
Oh, wow, that's a really shallow lens. You just got that recently, didn't you?
It came
Oh,
today.
yes, the truth comes out. She just got her widest one today. Primarily, you were shooting what with the 2.8s, though, before?
My long lens is a 2.8, but I had the 51.8 previously until it broke.
How did that one? Okay, this sounds like a story. We have to go into this story of how that one broke. I
I
think I
don't know. I
remember.
handed my camera to my husband and it stopped working.
Oh, so there wasn't a story behind it. It really just stopped working on you.
It really truly. I've had it for 5 years and I'm the third owner of the lens, so
You were the third owner of that?
I was the third owner, so it had a long
That's
life.
yeah, that definitely had served its purpose by the time it ended its life. Well, and that's what they say about glasses. Glass is usually good for about 10 to 15 years before it just starts to fray, where you get the seals around the edges of it, and those just start to fade with time. So, if you want to upgrade glass, that's generally a good time frame to look at for 10 to 15 years if you've got really good quality glass to start with. What other types of can since we're on the gear bag, let's talk about what else is in your bag. What else do you shoot with? You said your long is a 2.8. That was what? That was a 400?
This is a big 200.
70 to 200, 2.8. That's right.
And then I have the 2x extender for that.
The 2x extenders. Okay, so wow, that puts you at what? That puts you at 400.
Yes.
Wow. Now, are you on a full frame or a crop sensor?
Full frame.
Full
I shoot with
frame.
5D Mark II.
Ah, now see here, I thought you were shooting with the 1DS Mark II or something like that.
No.
Something pretty jazzy and blingy. But
No, every once in a while I get my hands on one, but my
are you
aim.
enjoying the 5D Mark II? Because I've heard things go both ways about that body. Are you happy with how it's been performing for you?
I really like it. I've had it since the end of November of last year. So
So oh, so about a
I
year.
had one of the first ones.
Wow. Oh, you're an early adopter.
Yeah, I
Ooh.
ordered it within minutes of them announcing it.
And what did your husband say when he found out you ordered it?
Okay.
So he was okay with that. See, if I did something like that, my wife would probably have
Well, it's a
something in
business
a
expense.
sling. I will just leave it at that.
Yes.
We're on a very tight budget here. Well, okay, well, getting back to the travel photography, don't you love how we get on tangents here when we converse? There's always tangents that come up. Getting back to the travel photography, last time we talked, we actually came up with three pretty good tips, and I was like, ooh, when we actually record this for real, let's get these tips out to the listening audience, because these are three things that sound like they're common sense, well, all except for one, really, sound like they're common sense. But they've never really been said this way before, and I think you've got a really interesting way of putting it. So let's start off with that first tip that you had for people on how to shoot great
You
travel photographs.
may live in the city where you're shooting, but people have to travel to that city every day.
See, and I
So
think.
your best travel destination is the one in your backyard.
And that's an awesome tip, because I can't tell you how many times when I've gone outside and I'm going around shopping or doing something stupid, and I'm running an errand, and I'll see something and I'll be like, ooh, that'd be a great picture, but I don't have my camera with me because I never had someone tell me that before, and I never thought to do travel photography in my own backyard. So that's a great tip. Tip number one is look in your own backyard for travel photographs, because people always travel to your locations as well. So that's a great tip. And then tip number two from Andy for travel photography was, drum roll,
Always be looking around and talk to the locals.
looking around and talking to the locals. And see, this is really cool because this also introduces the idea of subcultures. And like, for example, if you live in New York City, They have an area called Chinatown, which is very unique to the Chinese culture. And I know here in Denver there is an Hispanic subculture as well. And I'm sure there's probably subcultures to that same degree in the Dallas area as well. Is that a safe assumption to say, Andy? Would you
Very safe.
agree with that? Cool, very cool. So look around for the subcultures, talk to locals, because you can find a lot of great tips on shooting locations, things of that nature from the locals. And then my favorite tip that Andy had is like a, it's like a variation on the VAL, isn't it?
It is, but it's a VAR.
You called it a VAR, and we all know a VAL is a voice activated light stand, which basically means your assistant holds your light for you. So if a VAL is your assistant, what's a VAR?
A voice activated reflector. I have my assistants wear white shirts when they come shoot with me so I can reflect light off of them.
See, I think that's so awesome. That's such an ingenious thing. And it's a cheap way. You don't really have to buy reflectors anymore.
Right.
You know, it's a $2 t-shirt from Walmart or wherever. So not only can you save on gear costs, you can build that out probably pretty creatively, couldn't you? Like two bars at $400 an hour. They'd be like, what? Okay. Write the check. Just write the check. That kind of thing.
So, okay. Yeah, I can just see a client asking, it's a voice-activated reflector. Oh, cool, high-tech gear.
Yeah, let me sign off on that. How do I get one of them? Hire an assistant. So those are three really great tips. First tip was to remember that you can shoot in your own backyard because you can get a lot of great travel opportunities even though you're not going anywhere. It's probably the cheapest way to get really good travel-type photos. Then the second tip was to... This is where you talk.
Look around and talk to locals.
Look around and talk to locals. Make sure you catch your own local subcultures because they exist everywhere. And then number three was the voice-activated light stands.
And I even have a bonus tip.
Ooh, we love bonus tips. What's the bonus tip?
Stop shooting from your height.
Stop. What? Say that again. Stop shooting from everybody at
5'6 or 5'9. Get down low, get high, don't shoot just from straight above.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
The best images I've seen of travel shots are shot low and from the ground.
Oh, so shooting low is preferable to shooting high.
Well, I think it's either way. I prefer low.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because you're kind of looking up and you see more of everything than you do looking down or looking straight on. Yeah, that's a good tip. That's a great tip. That kind of ties hand in hand to one that I did a while back about doing a 180. You know, turn around and look at what's behind you. You know,
yes.
That kind of thing. Just the view in front of you isn't necessarily the only view that you have. Yeah, so we got four tips. Hey, we got a free bonus tip from Andy Smith.
It's a free gift with purchase.
Well, as long as it's not a BOGO and we gotta like pay you extra for coming on the show or anything like that. It's like, what do I owe you? Do I owe you 10 minutes of Skype time now or something?
I think so.
Uh-oh. I better cash in those dividend miles so I can get that over to you. As long as it's not another photo magazine. I've got so many to read these days, I don't know what to do with that. There's a good question. What's your favorite photo magazine? Do you have a favorite? Do you read?
I read all the time. I wish you could see the stack of magazines and books behind me that I still have to read.
Actually, I do see a stack behind you, but I assumed you had read all of those.
No, that's my to-read stack.
Oh, that's your to-read stack. Do you have any particular favorites that you subscribe to on a regular basis?
Photo magazines, I really don't subscribe to a lot. My favorite magazine for photos is probably either Texas Monthly or, this is going to sound really strange, American Cowboy.
Yeah, why does that sound strange?
Because I don't shoot a lot of those images, but their photography in that magazine is always beautiful.
Well, actually, that could probably go into being another tip, because if you want to look for great creative inspiration or sources of inspiration, look at photography magazines, magazines that have a lot of photos. It doesn't matter if it's in your genre or not, because you can find a lot of inspiration from things like that. And it definitely can encourage you to think outside the box. And two ways that you can do that are, what'd you say, Texas Monthly?
Yes.
And
American Cowboy and Indian, I believe. I think it's just American Cowboy.
We can Google that. We'll get those links in the show notes for you as she flips around to find a magazine.
No, the one on top is Surfer Magazine, which is also a good one for photography.
Yeah, I know that magazine very well. My cousin lives in San Francisco, I think. Is it San Francisco or San Diego? I think he's in San Francisco.
And there's a difference.
Yeah, I know. Really?
A few hour difference.
I thought all those sands were like right next to each other in California. Actually, no, he did a trip down to Costa Rica and did like a whole semester abroad where he like studied sand, got credit for it, and spent like 6 months surfing.
I'm like, nice.
Dude, Tim, that's so cool. Yeah, and he actually saw a few of his surfer magazines when I was out visiting. And you're right, that does have some great photography in there.
It does. I am guilty of picking up magazines just for the photography and not even noticing what the subject of the magazine is. I have everything from surfer to food magazines to...
The one I've noticed like that is Arizona Highways, although that's kind of dedicated towards the photography side.
Right. We have Texas Highways here.
Yes. Same kind of thing. Arizona Highways, Texas Highways, same kind of principle, where it's just really broad, expansive views. You can really get great ideas for landscape photography on that. Well, cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Andy. We have a couple more minutes before we're going to be segueing out to the tips and tricks section. And in that vein, I thought maybe you might be interested in sharing a couple tricks. Like, do you have any post-production tricks that you'd like to share with the listening audience for how you effectively post-process your photos?
You may kill me when I tell you this. I don't do a lot of post.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, okay, here's the question. Why don't you?
I have my camera set up to how I like to shoot.
Okay.
And so my user profile one is bumped up saturation, bumped up contrast. Oh. So I don't have to do a lot out of camera. I pretty much sharpen it for whatever I am putting it, you know, whatever medium I'm putting it on.
Okay. You mean like going to screen versus print versus canvas versus...
Right.
Okay, cool.
Right, and then on top of that, I try to crop in camera as much. So it's just picking which ones I want to keep is what I do in Lightroom.
Sure. And it's where you tag the ones where you want to delete or you want to keep them. Or...
Right. For portraits that I have people in, I do... You know, I clean up skin and make their skin pretty, but... That's about as much as I do.
Well, actually, that's a pretty good approach. I think I know a lot of photographers that have that minimalist approach where they don't do a lot of post-production where you're not really clearing out blemishes or anything like that. So that's a very cool tip to have. We're making faces at each other here, trying to throw each other off. Now, see, you know I'm recording the video on this. I'm just going to splice the audio out. So I actually can screen capture that.
That's fine.
And put that up everywhere so everyone can see what you're doing to try and make me mess up. You look like Bullwinkle when you do that.
That's a new one.
Yeah, we're having too much fun here. Listen, again, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk with us here at Learning Digital Photography. Now that we're back on focus and we've gotten our tips and tricks done, really do appreciate you stopping in. You can be found over at andysphotography.net, at Andy Smith for Twitter, and Andy Smith also on Facebook, correct?
Yes.
Did I miss anything?
I'm Andy Dotsmith on Flickr.
Oh, Andy Dotsmith on Flickr. Excellent. And didn't you tell me that you also share photos up there as well? You do like a photo a day or something?
I post a picture every day up there.
So if you want to see Andy's work on a day-to-day basis, I encourage you to stop over at Flickr. Andy, thanks again for stopping in. We had a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. I'll be back in just a minute, folks. Welcome back to the show. Thank you once again to Andy Smith for taking the time to sit down and talk with us here on the show. It was a lot of fun having her on. In case you couldn't tell from all the laughing that was going on during our conversation there. Leading into our last segment today, we've got a couple of listener questions and answers that also tie into the tip of the week for us. So I'm just going to start things off with our first question. Our first question comes to us from Jenny. Jenny writes in to ask if we have any ideas for cost-effective gear that we can recommend for the discerning photographer. On this week's show, Jenny, that's an excellent question. I actually did a post on this myself over on the blog. So if you stop over to the blog, I think it's last Friday's episode, dated November 20th, I did 10 tips for things you can purchase for the discerning photographer. And this is 10 ideas for under $25. So it's also a cost-effective way of doing things. This includes things like bubble levels. It includes things like remote switches, battery clips, even different types of batteries, things of that nature. So I would encourage you to stop over to the blog and check out those 10 ideas for photographer gifts this year. I would also encourage you to stop over by Scott Kelby's blog. Scott Kelby did a great post, his fourth annual Gonzo gear guide or Gonzo gift guide, I forget what it's called, but he did a great post on this just the other day, and there's a link to the full details that sits off his blog, and he also has promised to deliver another 10 coming up here in the next week or two, so I'll probably also do another 4 or 5 maybe of some more some more giving gifts that that exceed the $25 barrier. So keep your eye on the blog, Jenny, for that to come out. You'll have something like that from me as well in the near future. But Scott Kelby is probably the one that has his hands on most types of gear for any photographer of any skill rating. So he'd probably be the best resource to go to for that. Our next question is actually our photo tip of the week, because Ernie writes in to ask if I have a good monopod suggestion. And Ernie, this ties into our tip of the week. Congratulations for bringing this up, because this is something that you really should consider when you move into your holiday photography. If you're sitting around the table, or you're sitting around watching TV or watching football games or doing puzzles or whatever it is you do on your holiday seasons, you're going to be in low light photography oftentimes. And if you don't want to be distracting by popping a flash off, you can actually mount your camera on a monopod. And you don't have to pull out the tripod and hear all the clicking down. Have your camera on a monopod, and you can use a wall or a brace or a piano or anything of that nature, or a coffee table to lean up on the side, so you don't have the left to right movement. So that way you can pretty well lock a camera down to get some pretty slow exposures. So if you got people moving around, you can get some nice motion blur. And if you have people that are just sitting and hanging out and you don't want flash photography to really get glaring light on them, this would be an effective way to do that. To answer your question specifically, Ernie, though, I don't have a specific recommendation, because, to be honest, I am still shooting with the Walmart monopod that I purchased probably 6 or 7 years ago now when I was first getting back into photography. I haven't really gotten rid of that one. I'm sure there's some much better quality ones available through B&H or Adorama. My tripod is made by Bogan Manfrotto, and I know that they produce monopods as well. So I'm going to throw this back to the listening audience, and if you have any comments, recommendations, or suggestions for Ernie on what type of monopod to get, feel free to comment over on the blog, canonblogger.com. You can also let me know via email, jason@canonblogger.com, or share your thoughts in iTunes reviews and digs over at Personal Life Media. Our last question that I'm going to take a minute with, though, comes to us from Alex. I don't know if Alex is a guy or girl, but they write in to ask why the contest image restriction is set to 600 by 800 pixels. This is a great question. It's a big source of confusion, so I'd like to clarify one more time, especially for this holiday gift bonanza that we're doing on the blog now for the December contest. And if you don't know what these prizes are, you're getting a lot of stuff in this holiday learning digital photography giveaway. You're getting 2 books from David Duschman. One is his Within the Frame. The other is his new book that just hit the bookstores, Vision Mongers. You're also going to get a free gallery print from MPix. You're also going to be getting a copy of Photomatics from the folks over at HDR Soft. Just a lot of really great prizes to give away, so make sure you stop over to the Learning Digital Photography Flickr group. Check out the theme, check out the guidelines, and make sure you get your photo in soon, because you've only got about a month to do so. But to answer the question about the aspect ratio of 600 by 800, it's actually not an aspect ratio. That's just the dimension that I need the longest side to be. I don't care what your aspect ratio is. Your other side can be any dimension, because if it's shorter than the longest side, it'll fit the guidelines. Basically, what I'm trying to do is keep all the sizes relatively similar and also prevent me from reducing the quality of your image too much when the winner is selected and posted over on the blog. So that way I don't have to downsize it too much or introduce any jaggies or anything like that. So it's not an aspect ratio thing. It's just a longest side dimension. It's an excellent question. Thank you, Alex, for bringing it up. I really do appreciate it. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you to Ginny, Ernie, and Alex for writing in to share your questions on the show. Thank you to Andy for coming on the show and talking to us here at Learning Digital digital photography. Thank you also to the listeners and readers of the blog and podcast. I'm going to sign out for now. Wish you all a happy holiday season, and we'll see you next time at Learning Digital Photography. Have a good one. Happy shooting, everyone. Bye.